On this episode of Still Loading, we say hello to my little friend.
Excuse me?
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this new episode of Still Loading, the 40 for 40 series. Oh my gosh, we were just talking about that off mic, not the 40 for 40 series. The summer of PlayStation 2 is in full swing, and today we are talking about Grand Theft Auto Vice City. And the person who requested this game for this list is my buddy James from the No Geeks Allowed podcast. James, how are you doing today?
I am very excited to talk about this game because it is an awful, awful game, and it's for sinners.
before we dive in, because I actually had a story about Grand Theft Auto I literally just remembered now, but as I've been doing with this series, I've been asking everyone, what is their earliest memory with the PlayStation 2? Since we're doing a big PS2 nostalgia fest, I always like to see, how did you first get introduced to the system? What are some of your earliest memories? Things of that nature.
Sure. I remember I got it for Christmas. I think the year it came out, maybe in the year after. I have to look to see when the year came out and how old I was. But I do remember at the time my sister, she got like a really good job right out of high school, working for a pharmaceutical company. And so my sister was kind of rolling in it. She was living at home still. So needless to say, mm-hmm. I got some kick-ass presents from my sister come birthday and Christmas. And one Christmas morning, I came downstairs and there was a PS2 sitting there for me. And it might have been a year after, because I remember I had a handful of games already. You know, I got to open up like four or five games. I think I had like Simpsons Hit and Run was one of the games in there. And And I just fell in love with that system. I mean, I had this battle with myself all the time. You know, it's either N64 or the PS2 is like my favorite system, just depending on my mood or what game we're talking about. But from a financial standpoint, or collection standpoint, PS2, I think I had, you know, close to like 300 games at one point.
Dear God, dude.
My sister played games too, so it wasn't necessarily just my collection personally, but between the two of us, we had close to like 300 games. I mean, and that was back in the day. I mean, we played them and, you know, beat them like that, and we were able to trade them in and stuff like that for the most part. But I actually kept most of my PS2 games. I just like the way they sat on the shelf. Is like the first, you know, games that just sat like DVDs. So like, yeah, I got to appreciate the collection in my own house. And I'm surprised I never really got into collecting video games, but I remember I loved looking at my shelf of PS2 games. Like all the things are on the spines and they're easier to read than like the PS1 games, mm-hmm. like the jewel cases, stuff like that. But they just, that sound of opening up a PS2. I still love that sound. Like, you know, it's a DVD case too, but whatever, but just that, I love that sound. Like, you had a little spot to put your memory card in. I remember just having to delete stuff on your memory card because, like, oh, man, it's 8 megabits, man. Then you had to get, like, extra memory cards. And
they had, like, the double ones, like 16 megabit memory cards.
Yeah, just everything about it, just the amount of, like, peripherals that came with it. PS2 was so in your face, at least at, like, the local game stores and, like, all the toy stores and stuff when I was a kid. To me, it was, like, more prolific than Nintendo was. Nintendo was just great, and it stayed great, and will always be great. But then there was, like, this new guy. Like, PS1 was very not on my radar as a kid. Didn't really care. I was happy with the N64. Had no interest in PlayStation. PlayStation 2 came out. It was just so much more, like, this is, like... Because we didn't really have, like, a gaming computer as a kid, so I always played video games, like, computer games at friends' house. PS2 was, like, the big boy system is what it felt like. This is what the older kids play. And it was just... I don't know. I mean, it just... Everything about it was just fantastic. Like, the catalog had something for everybody. It wasn't tailored to anybody. PS2 is just... Yeah, now I'm talking about... I might have to... PS2 is definitely the best system. It's has something for everybody, I mean.
That's what... that's why I... it's the same thing. I did that I did that episode about what is my favorite console, and I came to the similar conclusion. I just kind of... I did it as quote-unquote scientifically as I possibly could, where... I just would look at each generation and be like, all right, what's my favorite console from this generation? What's my favorite console from this generation? So on and so forth. And then I would look at all that and I would compare and contrast and end up with the PS2. But no, you're right. And Nintendo's had had an issue with that label of theirs, that they're kind of the kiddie system. And they, especially in the, starting with the Genesis tried to label themselves as for older gamers. You know, this was like the cool console that older gamers would play, or the, you know, adults would play or something like that, had more mature titles. I mean, you look no further than, you know, freaking Mortal Kombat, where they had blood on theirs and Super Nintendo did not.
Yeah.
And then you go on to the PlayStation, and it was a similar thing. Like, there's advertisements from PlayStation with, like, Crash Bandicoot, like, taunting Nintendo of America, standing outside, just, like, with a megaphone. Dude dressed in a Crash suit just screaming at them, just kind of yelling, like, you like games? Or, I forget what he said, or something like that.
There's probably, like, a groin grab in there.
Like, what an aggressive marketing like strategy that they went with, and it worked because the PlayStation was a huge success. It sold better than the N64, and so when it got to the PS2, it's no surprise that it kind of felt that way, because, and that's when Nintendo also started shifting, because the GameCube was when they had, you know, Resident Evil 4 for that, and that was it was an exclusive for a while, then it came over to other consoles, but for a long while it was exclusive to the GameCube. So Nintendo was trying to reverse that mentality of them just being like a kiddie console. Like, no, look, we have this super violent horror game called this gore. I'm sure there's other games involved with that too, but the PlayStation 2, I had a similar thing. My uncle had one. I think I mentioned it on the first episode of the summer PS2, but I don't remember now. No, I don't think I did. My uncle had one, and I remember playing Medal of Honor Frontline at his house, but it was the demo of it back when demo discs were still a thing.
Oh, yeah.
And that game just blew me out of the water. Now I go back and it's very hard to play. The graphics don't hold up. The controls don't hold up.
Definitely not.
But, you know, not every PS2 game is like that. And to kind of bridge into Vice City is like a 50-50 thing with me in terms of how it holds up. Like, I think elements of it holds up. Like, I actually don't think the controls are all that awful. There's some problems with it. There's like, the controls are bad for modern sensibilities, but they weren't that hard to figure out, so that's why I kind of put it as like a 50-50. But then the other thing is, like, the mission designs were very dated, but at the same time, what can you expect?
Sure.
It's a game from, what, I mean, I probably should have written this down. It came out in 2002.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, you're looking at an 18-year-old game right now, almost 18-year-old. It'll be 18 years old. It'll be a legal adult on October 29th.
Then I can play it again. I'll celebrate. No, I get what you're saying, though. The only thing I think it does, it's definitely dated. You know, its design and, you know, story aside, its controls, they're definitely dated. But the only thing I do remember enjoying about it, even from playing other games of that era, their camera system worked. There's so many games that even come after this game in other consoles, even like PS3 generation, where they still didn't figure out how to fucking handle a third-person camera. And it's just, you know, I don't think Vice City is by any means like the fucking pinnacle. But at the time, just, you know, at the time, I couldn't tell you the difference between a good camera and a bad camera. But, you know, retroly playing it, you know, I played it a couple of months ago. I was like, this is not bad. You know, I was frustrated for a lot of missions, but not necessarily because of the camera, more or less just the design of the game itself.
Yo, same. That's a really good observation, because I remember when I was sitting down to give the game a shot, and full disclosure to all the listeners, I did not beat this one. I did play a chunk of it. I watched some online videos. I read up on the story, but I got a gist of everything. I got a gist of how the game plays, and that's also why I bring these experts on, because, well, I put expert in quotations. No offense, James. No.
Whoa. I got a PhD in hooker punching, so I got it from this game.
A PhD in GTA?
Yeah. Oh, I like that.
well, hooker punching is a little bit more direct. I mean,
I minored in hooker punching.
You minored in hooker punch. But I bring people on like you, so that way people have a good amount of experience with the game, so that way I can rely on you to pick up the slack where I just don't know it. Now, with that said, I agree with you with the camera controls, because I remember when I was tinkering around with it, I think to move the camera left and right, you hit R1 and L1. Like, it was weird. You didn't use one of the joysticks, if I remember correctly. It's been a minute, so maybe I'm off with that.
Yeah, that I don't remember. But I remember it definitely, hope I remember this. It definitely had, I think, had like a reset camera function if your shit got too silly. I hope I'm not mistaken that between that and San Andreas, because I know the one of them had it, because I know GTA 3 didn't. I don't think it did have it, because I remember just, know, you turn your camera too much and you get that, you just cut through fucking everything.
So here it is. It's, you can left analog stick / D-pad moves your player around, moves the character around. You can look around with the right analog stick, but only when standing still.
Yes. Yeah.
So that, so it kind of works because the camera did a pretty good job at following you. But yeah, you're, but like I was saying, that's the 50-50 part. It's like, you got it half right. Why couldn't you just let me control the camera all the time?
Yeah. I wonder when that mechanic went, when the, you know, the dual camera, you know, first person shooters kind of had it on lock when you just, you know, one obviously strafes and, you know, moves you forward and stuff like that. Just wondering, like, when the first third person, like, team got together, it was like, you know what would really not suck? If we could just control the camera a lot better.
I mean, even, but that even didn't really exist until freaking, Halo. Halo was the one that really revolutionized that control scheme and kind of made it the standard. So until then, it really wasn't, you didn't have that freedom of control with your cameras. So this, and this only came out like what, a year after Halo. So there's no way they were going to be able to change the control scheme on the fly. But yeah, so it's just, it's taken a long time for game controls to get as streamlined as they are now, but you know, here we are.
When I'm mowing down civilians, I just need my camera to be flawless. Like, you know what I mean? Exactly. I'm on the sidewalk just running over grandma and everybody else is in my fucking way, so I can go get some new guns in the game. I need my camera to be flawless. I love, you know, 9 out of 10. It would have been perfect.
No, let's dive into this then. So let's use that as our first jumping off point, the controversy surrounding this game.
Oh yeah.
There's so the Grand Theft Auto series in general has so much controversy surrounding it. I remember when, so the story I was going to talk about with this game specifically is, I remember a neighbor who lived down the road from me. I don't remember his last name. I wouldn't say his last name, but his first name was John, which is, you know, the most as generic as possible, but that's actually his name.
Looking at you, John, you piece of shit. Sorry, John.
he had this game. And I remember going over to his house and playing it. And I've always been such a goody-goody. So I remember watching him play it. I'm like, oh, my mom said I can't play this game. He's like, well, you don't have to play. You can just watch me play. And I'm like, I don't know if I should. And I remember I ran home and I told my mom. I saw he was playing Grand Theft. I mean, she didn't get him in trouble. Like, she wasn't like that. Like,
oh, yeah, yeah,
she
yeah.
wasn't going to get the kid in trouble. It was more just like, such a good, oh my god, this is such an embarrassing story, dude. In thinking of that, I remember when I was a kid, just this is how much of a goody-goody I was, and to an extent still am. When I was a kid, we would rent movies from the library.
Did you tell your mom you're recording an episode about Vice City? Are you gonna record after? Just no, like, yo, my buddy James came on and we talked about Vice City, mom.
No, actually, when I bought Vice City for the PS2, like after the fact, like 2 or 3 years or 4 years ago, I was still living with, no, more than that. I'm sorry. I was still living with my parents like 5 years ago. So I was like 25, 24, and I picked them up on eBay and she was mad I bought them. I'm like, I'm a 25. I was like, are you kidding me?
Mom ain't having that shit, bro.
No, it was awful. But so we would rent movies from the library, right? And this was after Blockbuster closed down, or actually no, it wasn't, but we realized that the library was like $4 cheaper and you could get the movies longer.
Oh yeah, so, they got you know, if anybody out there doesn't know that, like, that's still a thing you can still do. Libraries have massive collections that they receive through donations. Support your library. That shit is awesome. So, not just a shout out to the libraries, but
And it just gives you a much more like eclectic selection of movies that you wouldn't see on a streaming service or something like that, or you didn't know to look for, because that's kind of the downside of streaming services. Facts. And digital marketplaces, like, you can't just be walking down an aisle and be like, what the fuck's this? And
yeah, there's no inkling to search for certain things. You don't know what to look for. So, like, if you're ever just in that mood for something, I mean, just go check out your local library. It's like I said, you get a membership or whatever, but so what? Supporting America's best thing we got going for us. Okay, we got,
and it's
library.
Free, so it's like, well, not the rentals, but like the getting the membership is free. So we rented a movie that she liked called Doc Hollywood. It's a Michael J. Fox movie, and it's just about this Hollywood doctor that goes to like this, you know, bumblefuck and becomes the doctor there and falls in love with someone. It's a cute like rom-com type of movie. And I remember my mom saying like, oh, this is a cute movie, I think you'd like it. So she rented it for us. Well, she apparently saw the TV version of the movie, because there's a scene where a woman comes out of the lake just completely naked.
Nice.
buck-ass naked, and I was such a goody-goody, I turned it off. I was like, my mom doesn't want me to see that.
And, my man.
And I told her, I was like, Mom, there was boobies, and I didn't say that that point. I was like, she was naked. And my mom was like, what? Are you serious? And she, I'm so embarrassed to tell that story because it's like, what teenage kid? I wasn't quite a teenager. I was probably like,
I thought you were telling this when you were 25. I was like, buddy, we need to put this on a different show where you need help. Because
I know, right? I was going to talk to a therapist. No, I think I was probably like in between 11 and 13 or something like that. So. And, you know, remember, like, when I was 11, 13, that was, like, 2002. Not even. That was, like, I was 11 in 2000. So it would have been, like, 2000 to 2002. So we didn't really have the internet. So it's not like I could have, it's not like I had my sexual awakening yet by, like, stumbling on something online that I shouldn't have. You know what I mean?
Sexual awakening.
It's what?
Vice City, done did you dirty, man.
No, I love this game didn't do that. Come on. Polygons, no thank you.
Whoa, you're gonna tell me Lara Croft's fucking triangle fucking torpedoes didn't do it for you as a kid? Come on, man. Everybody was trying to get them fucking pyramids.
The pyramids.
Look at those geezers.
Oh my god.
Actually, they never did it for me as a kid. I always thought it was even gross as a kid.
Oh, dude, say, like, it's the same thing where, like, what is it? Game, like, Leisure Suit Larry.
Oh,
I
yeah.
never played those games, but I remember, like, hearing about them, and when I was, like, growing up, it's like, oh, I wonder what they're like, because, you know, you're curious about,
sure.
As a kid growing up, going through puberty, and then I looked up videos of it later on, like, why would anyone find this sexy?
Nah, I never did it for me, like, those kids that beat off the cartoons, like, I don't know about you guys, everybody's got their own thing, but I ain't having that shit, I ain't having that shit.
But anyway, so, yeah, I was a goody-goody, and I did weird. I'm still surprised that I did that. Like, any normal boy would have been like, oh my god, she wanted me to watch this and she doesn't know there's boobs in it. But I was such a goody-goody. I'm like, mom.
Yeah, I remember trying to play this, and I remember there was no really, like, when it came out, like, the controversy hasn't really hit yet, but my mom, we had GTA 3 when that came out, because that came out like a year beforehand, so I had that. My mom played that game. You know, it was just, she just saw it the way I saw it. It's just a game, you know. She was pretty confident in her job that I wasn't going to go around trying to emulate any of this shit, which I didn't. But times I wanted to, sitting in traffic, I was like, you know what? I got to go beat that guy to death. But I mean, the funny thing is, like, prior to that though, like, playing fighting games, like, I had, you know, a huge N64 collection, and, you know, just other PS2 games in general. But if it was like a fighting game, like Mortal Kombat, stuff like that, like, my mom would make me turn off the blood. If that was an option, she didn't want that, like, you know, fatalities and stuff like that were just, you know, no blood. For, like, I rented a game from Blockbuster or whatever video store, you know, and if I would tell, like, oh, you know, most games had the option to turn off blood back in the day for other systems and stuff like that. And but if, like, it didn't have it, my mom would, like, evaluate the game at that spot, and then we'd have to return it if it was, like, too much or something like that. But, you know, lo and behold, like, a couple years later, you know, GTA comes out. But again, it's a difference, you know, being like 8 and 12, but there's definitely some maturity differences. But I still remember, like, my mom be like, can you turn the blood off, or if I can make it green? I think some Mortal Kombat games you could turn the blood green, or other fighting games.
Like, that would make a difference.
I guess, because it's like, yeah, I get it. You know, really just the gratuitous violence at a certain point. But I do remember my mom playing GTA 3 and Vice City. My mom definitely liked Vice City because, you know, she lived through the 80s. Just shoot my mom hammering in the cheat codes and just, you know, getting an infinite everything just so she can just go fuck around in the sand. I don't think she ever completed one mission, but she just liked, you know, them driving mechanics. That's a huge why I love, you know, the sandbox games that in all the clones of GTAs. Just that the plethora of cars, and just you make it your own. Like, you don't have to play the game. Like, you could just do what you want. And I always like that. I always, like, even today I still play games like that where you just, the best bang for your buck is that replay value where I can make it my own. And back then when you had an imagination, you set up little forts and you just crash cars like a little kid in a sandbox. You know what I mean? And that's what I treated it as. It wasn't like, oh, I got to go do drugs. I want to be like Tommy Vercetti. And I was like, no, it's just a sandbox with my action figures. That's how I looked at it. And I think that's how my mom knew I looked at it. So that's how I think I got, like, to get away with playing this game when I was like 11 or 12.
Well, there's also, like, there was a study done, I forget, my game design teacher in college told me about this, where a bunch of people who didn't really know much about games played Grand Theft Auto, and all they did was they got in a car and followed the traffic laws.
Yep.
they would stop at stoplights, go at green lights, and just kind of drive around, get out, like park in proper space.
Oh, yeah, I did that. Yeah, that's fun.
Like, and it was kind of like, it was meant to be a test to show, listen, this game doesn't encourage any type of violence. Like, if you don't, it's, they're trying to make it as realistic as possible. Like, if you don't want to do it, you don't have to do it. The game's not telling you to go and do this. I mean, I understand it is in terms of the missions, but it's not, generally the missions aren't having you kill civilians. They're having you go after other gangsters or other mobsters or something like that. And I mean, that's, it's pretty much, we mentioned it off mic, but it's pretty much, this whole game is pretty much just a Scarface clone.
Oh, big time. Sort of. Oh yeah. 100%.
Just some real quick stuff on its controversies though. Vice City had a ton. One of the bigger ones was the, basically there's two gangs in here, and they were the Haitians and the, I forget Cubans. What the other one, the Cubans.
Yeah.
And there was a big controversy. Basically, a bunch of Haitian activists were mad because it depicted Haitians as "quote unquote" thugs, thieves, and drug dealers. And in response, Rockstar issued, I'm reading this off of Wikipedia, Rockstar issued a press release apologizing and acknowledging the concern, but insisted that the violence should be taken within the context of the game, which also contains violence towards other ethnic groups.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
And it's a funny thing. Sorry. Is like, I vaguely remember this when it happened, but one of the things that I do think now that, you know, maybe people can take away from now is like, oh, 20 years ago you got to get away with shit. No, you didn't. Even 20 years ago, when you cross the line that people thought you were crossing the line, there were repercussions for it. So just a little food for thought, you guys out there, that like, oh, I used to be able to do this when I was a kid. Sure you did, but there's, again, if you do things a certain way, even, you know, but you can make a movie like this too, but it, you know, movies are beginning to end script, and, you know, it's semantics a little gray area with this, but I mean, I get it. I mean, you really just took, you didn't show like one good Haitian. Like every Haitian in the game was a gang member. So it was like, there's no wiggle room that they tried to, like, they left themselves. Yeah. It was just like, oh, there's the Haitians. He's a gang member. Lo and behold, you're killing me. Drops like a gun and some packet. You know what I mean? It wasn't.
Yeah.
They didn't really try.
So that's a fair point. So it's like they didn't. They, no matter, everyone who was a Haitian in this game was bad. No matter what. So, all right, that is pretty fair. I'm not even making any, like, commentary over, like, the validity of the lawsuits. Like, especially, this is from 2003. There was, in newer versions of the game, they did take out any mentions of the Haitians versus the Cubans.
Yeah.
Which I thought was kind of interesting.
Well, here's what I think it's funny about that was, Vice City is a fictional city, but then you took, like, a real ethnic group and made them, you know, and, like, villainized them in a way. So, to me, if there was, like, oh, this is Miami and there's Haitian gangs, fine, it's plausible, but it's weird, like, to take, like, a fictional city and then introduce, like, you know, an actual demographic of people and then be like, hey, these guys are the bad guys. That's kind of fucked up. This is a fake city. Why they gotta be called Haitians? Why couldn't you make up another fucking,
why could it just be, like, just make a name for the gang? It didn't have to be an ethnicity.
Again, I didn't think of that at the time, but, you know, when playing the game and then, you know, going through my own notes, I just like, you know, that's kind of it's kind of fucked up. It's, everything's fake, and then it's like, New York City's not even New York City, but there's, you still got, like, evil Haitians. It's like, come on, man. Like, the Jamaicans, I think GTA 3 had the same issue. I think GTA 3 was also sued because there's, like, Jamaican gangs in that version. So they didn't even, like, learn their lesson. I mean, the games are a year apart.
I mean,
but still, like,
Rockstar just courts controversy. They don't shy away from it.
No, definitely not. Definitely not.
And I just, you know, the big scary thing, especially, you know, like I've said before, I'm Christian. I grew up very Christian, and my parents were very, you know, like, it was frowned upon to read Harry Potter because there was witchcraft in it, like that shit, like that. And when this game came out, like, that's all they would hear about is like, oh, you just, you know, you kill hookers and you know, like you said, we were joking around off mic, like, do cocaine and shit like that, get some blow.
Yeah, that's, and this whole game, I mean, it's a weird culture they cultivated with their namesake.
Exactly. Well, and what was funny is that when I went over to that kid's house, that John's house that I was talking about, I still remember he got a hooker in the car. They did their thing. You just saw the car rocking, and then you saw the money go down. And then after that, she got out. He just got out, beat her to death, and took the money back. And
I'm damn, like, right.
Holy shit.
She probably overcharged. I get it. That's a real life application, people. If you get overcharged, just beat him to death.
For a prostitute.
No, anything. Fuck it. You fucking overcharged me for a cheeseburger at McDonald's, there's going to be consequences. Not saying I'm going to beat you to death. I'm just saying, like, you don't know.
I was going
to
say, that's some ominous thing for, that's some ominous, excuse me, ominous warnings for a cheeseburger.
Bitch, I said no cheese. I wanted a hamburger. When I say extra pickles, you just put one on there. I get you think that's extra, but that's not extra. Now I'm getting myself mad. I'm about to go fight somebody. Damn you, Vice City.
That, that's just, it's how, it, it's what it was teaching us, man. It was just teaching us from a young age. No, so, Some of the other ones, there is a 18-year-old who shot and killed two Alabamian, police officers. And when he was basically in his statements to police, he said, life is like a video game. Everybody's got to die sometime. And even though, as far as I can tell, at least on this Wikipedia article, it doesn't mention how Grand Theft Auto was related. It just seems like since he mentioned video game, they're just like, Grand Theft Auto, yep. It's got to be that. Yep. And just kind of pinned it on that. And yeah, there's a couple, there's two other lawsuits as well, besides the two that we already mentioned. It's just, the game courted a lot of controversy. It was actually, what is it? In Australia, it was going to receive like a super, like severe, rating or whatever. And then they had to pre-edit it to receive an MA-15 classification. And then an uncensored version was released in the region in 2010, retaining its class. That's weird.
Yeah.
I'm kind of confused by this.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that just has to stem with, they had like an, I guess like, you know how like movies get screened or whatever, and then they kind of keep that director's cut on hand.
Yeah.
I guess maybe there's like, yeah, oh, you can't try and sell it for, I don't know how it works, I'm just speculating, I don't know. Well, shit.
Australia is notoriously strict with their, you know, their version of the MPAA, or not the MPAA, that's for movies, but the ESRB, their version of the ESRB is super strict with their ratings and everything. But anyway, let's dive into the story now. This story, it's relatively simple, not to say that there's not a lot of like intricacies with it, but it's, you know, it's a pretty straightforward plot. You play as the character Tommy Vercetti, who is a mobster working for the Ferrellis,
yep.
The Ferrelli family. He gets out of prison after a 15-year stint there for murder, and his boss, Sonny Fiorelli, wants to establish drug operations in Vice City, so he sends Tommy to oversee a drug deal, and the drug deal goes awry, and the drugs go missing, the drugs get stolen, and I believe, who gets killed? One of his friends gets killed.
So, Lance Vance, is that his name? Yeah, I think guy's name's Lance Vance. He's like your side cohort throughout the whole game for... most of the game, I should say. Yes. Lance Vance. His brother, I think, gets killed. So he pretty much, like, so you're back against the wall because, you know, Sonny, the deal went south and, you know, all signs point to you kind of fucked it up a bit. So you kind of got to redeem yourself. So Lance Vance's brother dies. So you kind of have like a partner. It's like, yo, this wasn't my fault. You know, shit went south. You know what I mean? The other mobsters. So he kind of like, you guys are like bound by like different roads to the same place. That's how you kind of form, you get a sidekick, and he kind of shows you the ropes because he's been in Vice City the whole time, so he's like almost your tutorial friend, kind of shows you the ropes, shows you like, hey, this game has boats and you know, shit like that.
You can't swim in this, right?
Like, no,
if you
no,
fall
you
off
die.
The boat, you're dead. Yeah,
just like the first one, you fall off the boat, you die. You don't swim to the third one. Or, well, not the third one, but San Andreas. That's when you can swim and shit.
Really? That's when you first start to swim?
Yeah, you get to swim, work. And actually, it's a stat. Like, the more you swim, like, your guy gets, like, buffer and his cardio goes up and he gets stronger and actually, like, plays into how the game works and shit like that. And,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, that game turned into a full RPG. It's a good game, but Vice City, to me, is the, it's that 80s stank that I like. That all my favorite movies came from the 80s, and it's just, this one takes place in 86, I think the game said.
Yes, 86.
Just a little fun fact. Some other movies that came out in the real life in 86. Top Gun, Ferris Bueller, Howard the Duck, The Golden Child of Eddie Murphy. That's a great movie. And then Big Trouble Little China, which is my favorite movie, also came out in this fictional 86. So I wish I could play this game with a mod where I can go watch Big Trouble Little China. As Tommy
Vercetti. That would be awesome. If it's like, if they did, you know how like Fortnite has movies in Fortnite now, if they did like a GTA Battle Royale thing, but in the 80s, so you can watch 80s movies in Vice City.
Hell yeah. I'd be all about that. That'd be cool.
That'd actually be pretty dope. I was saying before we recorded that I'm pretty sure this was one of the first games and, or just any form of media, not the first, but one of the first that really started to be like, hey man, weren't the 80s great? The earliest one I can think of is The Wedding Singer, Adam Sandler's The Wedding Singer.
Oh, yeah, that's a good... Yeah, oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a good point.
I like that movie a lot.
I really enjoy that movie. That was like towards the end of his hate. I don't shit on Adam Sandler. I like some of his newer movies as well, but that was starting to go down a bit in the Adam Sandler catalog. Yeah. But I think the bar was set too high with his earlier movies, so it's not fair to compare between like Happy Gilmore and Billy Madison. But Wedding Singer was an awesome movie with his Julia Gould was the name of the Drew Barrymore's
Julia
character.
Julia. Yeah, or she was going to be Julia.
Yeah, that's
Gould,
what it was. Yeah, I still remember that joke. Like he's just like, "You're gonna be Julia Gould," and I still hear it in my head. It's just those kind of jokes, and that's I don't know. All the '80s jokes are just stanky and delicious.
I love it. I mean, it's the '80s thing. I mean, now it's kind of winding down with the '80s nostalgia. I mean, that's pretty much how it all goes. If you look. It's like a 30-year thing. Like, 90s nostalgia is hitting it right now. Like, 90s nostalgia is going to really hit this decade, in all honesty, because it's pretty much like every 30 years. Because if you notice, like, a lot of movies in the 80s, they took place in the 50s.
Yeah.
And that's because that was 30 years prior. Everyone was reminiscing about the 50s. I mean, even think about... what is it? Stand By Me. I think that was...
That also came out this year.
50s. That came out in 86. There we go. That's just how the kind of like the nostalgia cycle goes, pretty much. I mean, to be fair, it is kind of weird. I mean, I shouldn't take credit for that observation. I heard it from somewhere else. It might have been Retronauts.
You,
it might have been somewhere
how
else.
How dare you let me compliment you then? How dare you? I wasted a good old compliment on you. How dare you?
But no, like the freaking... I it's weird. I've said this before. I love the 80s, and it's just super weird to me because I was born in 89, so I'm not really an 80s kid.
I'm the same way.
But I have so much nostalgia for just 80s everything, the 80s music, 80s TV.
Yep, I'm the same way. Like, I mean, again, this one is Miami Vice and Scarface smashed together. The guy who even voices Lance Vance is the one of the detectives in Miami Vice, the guy who, spoiler, he betrays his partner.
At the end of the game, yeah.
Yeah, oh, and in Miami Vice.
And in the show, in the movie or the show?
The show, I never seen the movie.
Really?
Yeah, Ricardo Tubbs, that's the character he plays. I don't remember the actor's name, but the detective Tubbs.
I need to watch Tubbs. I need to watch that show then, because, like, I love 80, like, in Miami Vice is such, like, an 80s... glory fest.
Oh yeah, it's on suits with fucking shoulder pads and like just plastic suits, like Eddie Murphy had that purple suit when he did that one comedy special.
You can watch it on the NBC app for free. It's also on Amazon Prime and Hulu, but I have a sneaking suspicion you need a Starz subscription for that, because whenever I see Starz and Amazon Prime as something as a subscription option for that, I'm like, you probably need to get Starz with it. That's what it usually is. Yeah. It's usually like Amazon Prime with the Starz add-on or some shit like that, which is annoying as hell. But anyway, so the story of the game, we kind of talked about the setup, how the drug deal went awry, and now he's having to work his way back up. And pretty much the majority of the game is up until like a halfway point, is the majority of the game is Tommy trying to gain ground and kind of gain his footing in the drug world.
Yep.
in Vice City or Miami. It's pretty much Miami.
Yeah, you essentially, like, that revenge thing kind of takes a back seat a bit, because you're just trying to, like, build a rapport with, you're doing, like, odd jobs for, like, a bunch of people. Like, that's another reason why I like these GTA games. It's just so many characters. But, mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, like, but then, that revenge thing starts to take a back seat, and it builds, like, a really... bursting relationship with him and that Lance Vance character. It's like Lance Vance, like, "Yo, my brother died, and you're over here like trying to be the kingpin of Vice City." He's like, "Dude, I didn't forget about you, but I want to do this too." And then you start this budding almost animosity between the two. And it's really weird to have a game like as silly as this is, with all of its like sex and drug and like fart jokes and stuff like that, to have like a really good tension build between like your characters. It's like, "Yo, I know he's gonna betray me." Like, you can just smell it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And that's just one of the reasons I love this. To me, this game played like a movie. It was the first time I played a game that made me appreciate, like, in a movie sense, the GTA 3, the main character didn't talk. It was really hard to give a shit. I mean, it was just...
Yeah.
I mean, it was fun. I mean, the story was okay, but, your main character had said nothing. I think his name was, like, Claude or Clyde or I forget they called him, but something stupid, but...
I think it was Clyde, but I also didn't play GTA 3.
You didn't miss out on that one. They got their feet wet with that one, yeah, I mean, this game just felt like a movie, like, all the characters, I mean, like, the movie, I mean, I should say it feel like a movie, because, like, It has a huge cast of people in this, like Ray Liotta from The Goodfellas and other shit that he did, voiced Tommy Vercetti. Tom Sizemore is your boss as Sonny Farrelly. Dennis Hopper's in this. Burt Reynolds is the Avery cowboy character, who like buys up all the real estate. And he's like a, you know, he's that Doug Dimmadome with a Dimmesdale. That, like from, that guy. From... He's that guy in Vice City. Well, Gary Busey's in it. He plays an awesome character. Danny Trejo is like this. I think he's one of the Cuban gang leaders.
That's crazy. They had so many like famous people doing voices in this game.
Yeah,
like that's just wild to me.
And at then, like even like back then as a kid, like I was a pretty big into movies. Not so much as I am now because I have a lot more money and free time to watch them. But just you know, piggyback on another reason why I love the PS2 so much. It was my first DVD player. I mean, that was huge to me. Like, my parents had one in the living room, but I had my own to watch, start my own collection as a kid. And then, you know.
Real quick side note, you were right. It's Claude, not Clyde for GTA 3.
It's Claude?
It's Claude.
I knew it was something like Clyde or. I knew it was something like that. I couldn't remember which one it was. But it's something.
But sorry, you were saying it was your first DVD player as a kid.
Yeah. Like, it's just a. And to me, this felt like playing a movie. You know, I had like Devil May Cry and it had its cinematics, which were cool, but I just wanted to slice shit. There was no. I had no investment. To just give a shit about Dante and anything he was doing. I just wanted to fight demons and, you know, it was just cool to me. But then, like, Vice City, I'm pretty sure I'd have to really go through, like, a PS2 catalog, but I know playing it was just, like, I couldn't wait to do the next mission. How did this character progress? How does his relationship, like, Luis Guzman is, like, one of your antagonists in the game, and his character is so over the top, like, he's Luis Guzman, like, I don't know if you guys are familiar with Luis Guzman, but he's the same guy in everything he's in. And he's that in this game, and it's just, every character's iconic in this game. It's just, you just have to, like, look a little bit.
I'm actually going to look up, because I did see, hold on, let me see. So yeah, Ray Liotta, like you said, is Tommy Vercetti. Where is Philip Michael Thomas is Lance Vance.
Yeah, that's the name of the actor from Miami Vice.
Yeah, yeah. They played Ricardo Tubbs. And it's funny because I was reading that one of the things they really went for was that same kind of dynamic between Tommy Vercetti and Lance Vance as the same dynamic in Miami Vice.
Yeah, and it shows, now, man.
No, it's crazy. Okay, so the guy who plays Ken Rosenberg, I don't recognize the actor. His name is William Finkner. Maybe you recognize it.
I don't know who that is, but I know who he's based off of because it's another one of my favorite movies.
I've seen him in a, like, if you see him, you'll recognize him. He's been in Armageddon. He's been in Black Hawk Down. He's been in a ton of different movies. Like, you'll recognize him if you Google him. But what's crazier to me is they have Dennis Hopper.
Yep.
They have Tom Sizemore, which is not, you know, he's a pretty big actor, but not, you know, Dennis Hopper. Burt Reynolds.
Yep.
Luis Guzman, like you said, Robert Davi is in this.
He's a Bond villain.
He is.
That's all I know, man.
He's also in Die Hard. He's one of the Johnson agents in Die Hard.
I forgot about that.
You have Lee Majors is in this, the $6 million man.
Yeah, he plays a biker gang leader who's just like, just like a
Baker
Hell's Angel.
Is his character's name.
Yeah, Mitch the Bitch Baker. He plays like a tongue-in-cheek version of like the Hell's Angels group. Mm-hmm. And he's like this little just backwater, not like backwater kind of guy, but he's just a real dirty group of guys. Like, yeah, that whole boat biker motif kind of thing. That's his whole shtick. But he's a cool character in that too.
That's just wild to me that they had such a ridiculously talented cast of people for a video game in 2002. Like, that just, I don't know how, like, Grand Theft Auto 3 must have given Rockstar a shitload of money because I cannot understand how they were able to afford Ray Liotta, Dennis Hopper, Burt Reynolds, Robert Davi, Gary Busey, Lee Majors. Maybe Robert Davi isn't like the one of the most well-known actors, but like he's still. I mean, they got the dude from Miami Vice, like Luis Guzman. Maybe Luis Guzman wasn't as popular at the time. But, like, the fact that they had Burt Reynolds, Dennis Hopper, Ray Liotta...
Well, Jenna Jameson's in it, too, and she was definitely popular at that time.
Who was in it?
Jenna Jameson.
Oh, yeah.
The porn star?
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, she plays a porn star named Candy Sucks.
Candy Sucks.
Yeah.
With three X's.
Yeah, and...
of course.
And she's actually kind of funny. She's definitely, like, a... You know, like a... You know, she's, like, a very sexualized character, but she She definitely touches on something like real world, like, hey, you should take me seriously. I also want to be an actress. I'm like, no, shut up. You're a bimbo. And like, it starts to wear on her and she starts to like sway and kind of lean towards people to help push her career forward that doesn't require her to take her clothes off. It's pretty cool. It's a little, even, again, nothing I realized when I was a kid. I was like, oh, cool, booby girl. But yeah, it was just little nods like that, like little subtle things where it's just like, hey.
They gave her an actual character arc instead of just making her the eye candy.
Yeah, instead of just being like,
triangle candy.
Yeah, exactly. Gotta round out them polygons. My God.
So, but they, as Tommy kind of gets more of a foothold in the Vice City underworld, he pretty much at one point, there's a switch that flips. I don't know if it's halfway through the game or where is it at specifically. You might be able to tell me more or tell me more accurately, but he pretty much gains complete control over Vice City's drug trade. Now, I know I've skipped a lot in terms of small missions here, not even small, but like missions in between here and there. But that's pretty much like, would you say that's the midpoint of the story or the game?
Yeah, mid to like 3/4 of the way through. You take over, like, and I don't know if you played, like, there's a lot of games that do this now. I probably can't think of the top of my head, but like when you take over a zone, you kind of get, you buy property in this game. And then once you kind of like, you get enough money, you buy the property and you kind of like, that's kind of your zone now. You know, it's just like, it's a slow progression as you start taking over things and generating more income. Kind of like in the movie Scarface. But yeah, it's definitely not the end. It's definitely not the I would say the apex of the game. It's,
well, no, because it's definitely not. I was just saying it's more kind of like that moment where he becomes the pretty much the guy who runs the drug trade in Vice City.
Because you killed,
that is the now inciting moment for the latter half of the story, for pretty much like this is the rising action, and then you have we're getting to the tippy top of the rising action. Like, this is setting everything up for the climactic end.
Yeah, no, you're definitely right, because once you pretty much take over Luis Guzman's his character's name is Diaz. Once you take his mansion, it's literally the Scarface mansion. It's like shot for shot the Scarface mansion. Once you take that over, you're the guy now. You're now the guy, and you get to enjoy being the guy for a while and defending it a little bit, defending your newly acquired empire. And a lot of the missions kind of tailor to that while you're still cleaning up some shit. And it also builds more of that animosity between you and Vance. Because he's like, oh, she's like, all right, you forget about me? And it's like, nah, well, now I'm the kingpin. You got to give me a minute. I got to enjoy this. And that's pretty much the breaking point between you two.
Because now he thinks that it's a fair point, too, because he pledges allegiance to Tommy, and then Tommy finally gets everything that he wants. And Vance is like, or Lance is like, what the fuck? You said you would help me get these guys back.
Oh, yeah, Tommy is a bad man. He is not like, he's not like an anti-hero. You actually play a bad guy throughout this whole thing. Like the other GTAs, you can probably find some like light at the end of the tunnel. Maybe some. Tommy Vercetti is a shithead. Like, he's just a straight up bad dude. There's nothing good about him. He's not loyal. His one friend, the Ken Rosenberg character. He's based off of Sean Penn's character in Carlito's Way, who's the same haircut, same drug addiction. He gets a crazy drug addiction. Tommy just cuts him loose, like, nah, you're getting high on my supply, and you're no longer of use to me. And yeah, Tommy's not a good dude. There's nothing to like about him. It's just sometimes fun to be that guy. And you know, he doesn't get his like at the end of Scarface, because Scarface gets shot to shit at the end. Tommy Vercetti lives. Spoiler alert, it's game came out in 2002, so it's not my problem.
Well, that's what I kind of figured with everything that we're talking about on here. Like, every game for the summer PS2 is going to be a spoiler alert, excuse me. Are there any missions leading up to that switch where he runs the drug trade that you can think, or any like plot lines or anything like that, that are like, you think are like really good or really interesting, or that were some of your personal favorites?
Yeah, there's definitely, it's one of the, I think, the last interactions you have with Danny Trejo's character. So he's like a chef in like this rundown part of like this Cuban part of town, you know, predominantly dominated by the Cuban gang and stuff like that. But I'm pretty sure, I don't want to misremember, but there's definitely a mission where you're one of the very few enjoyable times you're in a watercraft in any of these GTA games, because it's awful mechanics to hit a wave and your shit just goes sideways. Like, unless it's Wave Runner, I don't want to play any water games. They're not fun. Water levels suck in Mario. The water tracks in Mario Kart suck. It's not fun. All right. Water World was a stupid movie. I don't care. No. Finding Nemo. Fuck that movie. That movie sucks too. Fuck.
So much hostility towards water.
Just angry. No, but there's definitely this mission where you get to edge out your the competition. Like, some competition starts to creep up on you, and, like, they kind of have your number, and you just do, like, the supply. Like, you finally, you just destroy the enemy, the rival's supply in its entirety. And there's, like, that's the end of that gang. They just, that shuts them down completely. And it's just, it's fun. Weirdly enough, like, that's, like, I had a favorite mission, and I pretty much, when I got to that point, preparing for this game, or for this episode, I stopped playing it because I just got my favorite. There's, like, such tongue-in-cheek band called Love Fist, and it's just a play on that glam metal where all they do is just drugs and have sex, and, like, that's their whole shtick. But there is one mission where, like, you're their chauffeur, and it's such a goofy mission, but there's a bomb in their limousine, and you're driving, and but it's, like, the literally the premise of the movie Speed. Like, this game just ripped movie after movie. And so you can't go too fast, you can't go too slow in this limousine. And, of course, they crank up the traffic when that mission starts, because you never see any cars on the road. And all of a sudden, you know, now you got to not hit shit. And, you know, otherwise the car blows up. But in the back, it's these four band members, like the Rolling Stones or, like, Motley Crue, high on drugs, trying to just defuse this bomb. While you're just driving around Vice City. And it's just very enjoyable. It's just the banter and the dialogue. I think there's like 6,000 lines of dialogue in this game, I think I remember reading. And, and it's just, I don't know, it's just shit like that. Like, they're more memorable to me than, like, edging out gang leaders and stuff, because, like, I've seen that movie. But, and then, like, the final fight scene is, you know, it's Scarface, the same scene, how Scarface ends, just Tommy Vercetti walks away. Yeah, I don't know. It's just, this game is literally just, I love movies more than I like video games. And to me, this was just playing a movie. And I was like, hey, I know that movie. And then years later, playing it again, I catch other things that I notice that are movie references. I'm trying to think of one. So, like, there's RC missions in the game, which are the worst on Earth. You have to fly, like,
I
oh
saw
my
a
God.
Lot of complaints about those.
They don't get better. Like, they do that shit in the San Andreas, too, and they're even worse. But the name of the company that makes all the toy cars and stuff is called Top Fun, and Top Gun came out in, you know, in the, this movie takes 86, so it's just things like that I didn't notice as a kid, because I didn't like Top Gun as a kid, and I still don't like Top Gun. You put that in the list with Finding Nemo. But, yeah, there's just so many nods to it. It's just, I think that's bad writing in today's standards. I think it's just a rip-off stuff and make it a spoof. We kind of talked about that, you know, before the episode started, like, spoofs are kind of, like, they're very dated. But, like, it definitely picks, like, the most iconic of movies to like, spoof off of in a way that's just like, all right, this game's very self-aware.
It's also a little bit safer to do, to be tongue-in-cheek and be, not topical, but referential when it's references that, when you're making references to something years prior. Like at that point when that game came out, you know, the 80s were at least 12 years, like, gone at that point, right? So, the at least 12 years. So, and I mean, the year it's based off of is 86. So you're looking at like 16 years. So at that point, like, a lot of that pop culture stuff has been more solidified at that point. So you could make references like Indiana Jones and play the whole thing up to Scarface, because movies like that now aren't just considered like contemporary. They're considered classics.
True.
So
that's
true. It's easier when you make references like that. It's a lot easier when you set the game in an older time period, because anything that you know is most likely something that has helped, like, if not withstood this test of time, withstood it enough that a few people know about it. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Like you said, they're definitely picking iconic things that tongue-in-cheek and not necessarily, like, iconic things from that iconic movie that you might get. It's, like, it's just a broad, just a big net. Like, hey, you know Top Gun? Here's Top Fun. You fly a plane. And stuff
one thing
like that.
I did find that was kind of funny, just a little Easter egg that I was looking up some, like, Easter egg stuff online. Apparently if you wait to, like, at 2300, I don't know if that's in-game time or if that's, like, real world time, but the DT hotel will light up. I don't know if it's
like
DT
a penis
stands for down. Yep.
Yeah.
It's a penis, and then the fountain goes off in the top center, so it looks like it's just splurred in everywhere.
And it's stuff like that I didn't catch as a kid. It was, like, way later on. I'm watching, like, a YouTube series of, like, Easter eggs to find. Like, I found one as a kid because I remember being in, like, I think it was in a PlayStation magazine or someone told me, but another obvious reference to Scarface, there's an apartment you can go in, and you go in the apartment and you find the chainsaw on the bloody wall. If you haven't seen the movie Scarface, there's a guy in the movie who gets cut up by a chainsaw in the bathroom. This game leans more into that. I mean, that's where you go. You can literally go get a chainsaw is one of the weapons in the game. And yeah, I mean, it's just stuff like that. I found that as a kid by accident, but there's so many. Like, Rockstar just, like, I would love that be that guy who's in charge of just budgeting. Like, all right, we can get the game out. We can add more real content. Nah, 400 Easter eggs. Let's do this.
Well, they literally had an Easter egg a literal Easter egg. There's a window that you can just, like, this wall that you can just jump through. Like, it, you just clip straight through it and you land in this room and it's just this chocolate Easter egg.
Yeah, it's just a happy Easter or something like that, I think.
Yeah, yeah. That's all it is. It's just this little tiny thing. And one of the ones that the one guy looked up, that the video I saw on YouTube, I thought was like super cool, was there's these two stores. I don't know where they are at in the city. I'd have to like look it up again, but essentially it was like there, it basically implied that it was doing like a Sweeney Todd type of thing. Like one business was like killing people and the other business was kind of using the bones and meat and shit like that.
That's
like
cool.
It was crazy.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with that one, but I believe it. I mean, it's the Rockstar. They're just filthy with that kind of stuff. One of my favorite ones is, you buy this, one of the properties you guys get to buy in the game is called Sunshine Auto. Not a big deal. No plot devices behind that. But that's where you get the first take. There's a car that's based off the DeLorean in it. It's called the Deluxo. Deluxo, I think it is. Yeah, Deluxo. I'm looking at it right now. It's Deluxo. And, you know, that's my favorite car in the game. I loved Back to the Future as a kid. First two, at least. And, you know, I just drove around it pretending I was fucking Marty McFly and shit like that. And it was just, again, I created my own fun in a game where I'm supposed to be just blowing up stuff and all that. But it's just like, that's my favorite car. Like, that game, Vice City, was the first time to introduce motorcycles. And, you know, just racing around on a motorcycle at, you know, what seemed like great graphics at the time was so, like, it just felt like the wind was there. Even though, just Vice City is, like, I hate that it's about, like, something so horrible that I'm the expert to talk about it. But there's just so much more I love about it that's not necessarily the hookers and cocaine. I mean, that's a good part, too. That's a good Christmas. But, like, the other parts are really good, too.
Well, so real quick, I did look up that what I was talking about with like that body thing. It's at two different businesses, the Funeraria Romero and the Carnicero Romero. I butchered that. I'm so sorry, everybody. But basically, Funeraria one is an undertaker business, and the other one is a butcher business. And so it's implied that the corpses are used in a nearby butcher shop called, you know, Carcino Romero, as the shop has an arm, a brain, and a box reading human organ for transplant on display in the window. This is further reinforced by the fact that the skeleton in the open grave behind the Funeral Romero has an arm missing.
I didn't know that. Yeah, I don't think I ever found that. I know in that one of those two, there's a Bela Lugosi vampire portrait in one of them, and it's defaced, and it says, like, I think it says something like derogatory against vampires or something like that.
That actually is, that's inside the shop at the funeral parlor.
Yeah, I remember that one as a kid too. I didn't get that joke until way later when someone on YouTube had to explain it to me. But I remember seeing it as a kid. I was like, is this supposed to be funny? Like, I remember even as a kid, like, the game was self-aware, and like, I was supposed to laugh at certain things, but I didn't know what I was supposed to laugh at. I just remember seeing them. Yeah. I do remember Bela, because I knew who Bela Lugosi was. You know, I was always a horror fan.
Blah. Blah. I want to suck your blood.
I want to do cocaine.
I'm going to do a bump off the hooker's ass. Blah.
Only at night, though. He'll explode in the daytime.
Only at night. Yeah, so I mean that the end of the game, we've been kind of jumping through the story, jumping off the random side topics and whatnot, but to kind of cap off the story, the game ends with Tommy in a shootout with his former boss, Sonny Forelli. Ends with a shootout, and it's like we were saying before, it's pretty much the end of Scarface, but unlike Scarface, Tommy doesn't die.
Right.
I think you can even use the gun from Scarface, I think, at the end part. I think if you have it or something like that. And it's just, you know, you fight a couple waves of guys and then you kill, you know, the Sonny Forelli, and that's the end of the game.
It's
and
really easy.
Is it?
Yeah. And it's annoying because, like, GTA 3's ending is, like, really hard because you have to, like, fight a helicopter. Like, you have to chase it throughout the town to fight it, and it's super hard. And then San Andreas, the last mission of that, when you're playing as CJ, I think it's like this train mission. I can't remember the specifics of it, but I also remember it being like awfully hard. And then I remember this one just being like a joke. You just mow people down, like the shit you've been doing the whole game anyway. And it's like, oh, okay. And then you're the guy. You're the guy.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's pretty much all it for the story then. Is there anything else that you want to talk about the story though before we move on?
Not really. I mean, if you've seen Scarface and Carlito's Way, it's just that's the whole story. I mean, there's side missions and there's a lot of characters just to enjoy. I would even just recommend just watching the cutscenes on YouTube of every mission. That's you'll get the whole story from that. But it's not really.
Someone did a supercut of those where it's like a 3-hour long movie or some shit like that.
Oh, well, that's kind of cool. I might have to check that out.
I think you can find. I think you can find it on YouTube. There's like a supercut of. I think it's just called like Grand Theft Auto Vice City the movie. And I don't know if they like sprinkle in a little bits of gameplay to kind of have like some connective tissue to the different cutscenes, but who knows?
That's pretty cool.
I love stuff like that. I love it when they do stuff like that. There's that's how I. What is it? I didn't want to play Kingdom Hearts Chain of Memories for the Game Boy Advance / the remake they did for the PS2 because that game system I absolutely despise. It's like, have you played any of the Kingdom Hearts games?
I played the first one. It was okay.
I love the series, but the first one has some pretty stiff controls, not going to lie. But the first game, you know, it's kind of like an action RPG. You know, you're manually hitting the button to attack. You gotta choose when you want to use magic and this and that. Chain of Memories, it's a card game, and you can it's based like the moves you do to the enemy are based off of which cards you draw, and I'm sure a lot of people loved that but I don't like card games. Like I don't like have to figure out an entire system just to be able to attack a character. If the whole game is a card game, that's different. But I mean, if like the purpose of a game is to be a card game, you know, like freaking what's the Blizzard one? I'm blanking.
Oh, Hearthstone. Yeah.
If it's like that, even though it's not something I'd want to play, I could be like, okay, I can get into this because I have to understand the mechanics of this card game. But this was a Kingdom Hearts game that suddenly became a card game. And so what I was used to with Kingdom Hearts is just being able to go in and attack and kind of like plan out my strategy using what magic had. But no, you can't plan strategy. You just get a random deck of cards and then you have some control over building that deck, but it's from what I remember, it wasn't that like I didn't have that much control. But it's also been a minute, so I could be way off with that. So I mean, someone can correct me if I'm wrong with that. But I don't remember there being a whole lot of control over what cards you can add or remove from your deck, which kind of defeats the purpose. And if you don't feel like you're in control of your own deck,
it kind of seems like those games you just put on like auto run. And I know there's a lot of games that play like that, but I know you're coming from. I couldn't play that. Not especially coming from like a combat action oriented game to that. I mean, I get you want to experiment and try stuff looking at you, Zelda 2, but it's some things just don't make the cut.
I'm with you on that. I just, certain things you're expecting one thing, you get the other, just ruins the whole experience for you. But yeah, so with some quick development information, this was going to be an add-on to Grand Theft Auto 3 originally, but after, you know, developing it more and enjoying it more, they decided to, you know, branch the concept out into its own standalone game, and that's how it became Vice City, which I thought was kind of interesting that it was going to be just an add-on to, like, you know, like an expansion pack pretty much to Grand Theft Auto 3.
Yeah, I think there was like a 1 month turnaround time. I think when GTA 3 came out, like a month or two later is when they actually was like real deep into making this game. Like they were just like cranking this. They were ready to go with this game.
Mm-hmm. And it's cool because then it became like a labor of love for them. It wasn't just, all right, here's the next project. It was something that was going to be just something minor, and they enjoyed it so much. I think that kind of stands to prove why so many people love Vice City so much. There is a lot of love poured into it by the team. From the vibe I get, at least, there's a lot of love poured into it by the team that made it.
I also think a big part of it too is it has an amazing soundtrack. Like GTA 3 had a lot of songs made just for the game, and so they're not. They don't really stand out too much, but this is like the 80s hits. Like we're talking Michael, like I can only imagine how much money they had to pay to get some of these songs. Maybe back then in 2002 when video games weren't really, you know, as big as they are now, maybe that the royalty check wasn't had to be that big. But like Michael Jackson's in it, like Rick James is in it, Motley Crue's, like that's just something I can remember off the top of my head. But it's a huge, like they have like
aren't Hall and Oates in it too?
I think, I mean, I don't know, but anything in the 80s came out is in this game. Phil Collins is actually in the game. Like, you can actually see a Phil Collins concert. I forget how you did it, but there's Phil Collins in the game. Like, Phil Collins as Phil Collins is in the game, and there's, like, a virtual concert he does. It's, like, one song, I think, but... and the sound, like, the soundtrack is so catchy. Like, 80s songs, it was just 80s pop, like, Madonna's in it and stuff like that. So it's just, like, all these big-name stars. I mean, I think they came with the complete package. I mean, I don't think it ever gets a... You know, I like talking about, like, video game, like, soundtracks and stuff like that, and I think when you use this kind of game, it's, like, cheating a bit, because all these songs are great anyway. They're not, like, original scores or anything, but what they chose, I think, should be commended, because... The songs go so well with the missions play, because, like, regardless what radio station, you can change the radio station in these games. Regardless what radio station you're listening to, it'll change to an appropriate song, like the Top Gun song. I don't know what the name of the song is, but the song that plays in Top Gun that everybody knows, like, push it to the limit.
The Danger.
Yeah.
Oh, I was thinking of Danger Zone.
Oh, yeah, I think it's the same song.
Highway.
Yeah, that one. I think it's in that game.
Danger Zone.
But, like, stuff like that, like, they just cue up the music, and it's, again, the reason why I love the game, makes me feel like I'm playing a movie. Like, I'm, like, it's that chase scene, and it feels like a chase scene because I think, you know, music plays a big part of that. And like you said, it's a labor of love on their end, because they could have just went with some original stuff that nobody cares about again. But, you know, they shelled out whatever. I don't know how much money they made. I'd love to know how they had this budget. But
you know what? Let me try to Google it. Grand Theft Auto Vice City music budget. Let me just see if it's huge. If anything comes up. Oh, $5 million.
Wow, that's a lot for a video game.
Wait, hold on. Hold on. That might have been for the budget for the whole game.
All right. That's... I didn't think it'd be that much. But, I mean, there's seven... I think eventually the game came out with, like, CDs that you could buy or vinyl albums or whatever for each radio station. Because each radio station, you know, was literally, like, 16 or so songs, maybe 12 songs. And there was, like, 8 radio stations, I think. So that's, you know, even just say 8 times 10, 80 songs that they had to license out... I mean, I can only imagine how much that adds up to, but...
Mm-hmm.
I mean, some probably not so much. Not all of them are, like, hits, but, I mean, there's a whole station of, like, alternative, like, I think it's, like, Cuban or Havana music. So I don't know any of them, but, I mean, they could be hits, too. I mean, I never listen to that radio station because I don't understand what they're saying, but they could be hits.
I don't listen to radio in general anymore, so, like, I always found it, like, interesting with radio stuff, like, on GTA. Like, I seldom listen to it. It's weird.
Just drive around, like, silently?
No, I don't drive silently, but, like, I don't pay attention enough to the soundtrack. It's weird. I don't know. And it's not to say that I don't like it. It's just for some reason it was always hard for me. I guess because they gave you so many options, I'd want to listen to everything and be like, oh, what's this station playing and how many songs are on this? And so because of that, I would end up being paralyzed by choice and not do anything.
That makes sense. I'll give you that.
It was just kind of, and that's why it was just kind of weird. And it's not a bad thing. Like, I'm not, like, blaming that. It's just, you know.
I thought you were the type of guy, like, just, like, you go to play the game, you just put the TV on mute. You're like, nah. No. I'm in the game. I don't want to hear nothing. I got no time for sound effects.
I can't do that. I mean, I lose my cred for all the composers I've interviewed. It's a great game. I haven't listened to your soundtrack. I just play the game mute.
Does that soundtrack have subtitles?
I mean, this game you could. I mean, if you had all the different, if you had That's everything true. Subtitled. But okay, so we've talked about the story. We've talked about the soundtrack. Anything to say about the graphics, really?
They don't really hold up.
No, they don't.
yeah, that's one thing I will have to say. Like, the proportions on Tommy Vercetti, like, when he's running, like, he just has, like, these, like, just orangutan swinging arms and his hands. You know, back in the day when they didn't know how to do fingers in any video game, you just had these, like, clumps. For Paul's,
mm-hmm.
The people back then, they didn't do people well. Cars are fine, and, like, cartoonish characters, they were fine. But the realism, I don't know. I hate the crap on it, but it doesn't really hold up well. It's not good. But I think this game does a great job distracting you from that by being, like, a sunny, like, Miami city. So you're looking at all these neon lights, and people are kind of getting hit with that fluorescent light a bit. So I think it hides it. Mm-hmm. But taking a step back, there were way better games that looked way better in that PS2 era. It just, I don't know, graphically it's not great, but the cars look cool. I'll give it to the cars. Cars were fun, and their damage mechanics were fine. I mean,
they're a little over the top for my liking, but they made it entertaining, to say the least.
Yeah, I would say so. I don't know, my car flipping over needs to explode and all, like a giant fireball, but I get it.
I think overall I agree with you. Like the graphics don't hold up, but also like one of the hardest things, it's weird. One of the hardest things for people to draw, animate, you know, 3D model, render, whatever, is the human hand. The human hand is just such a weird shape because it's so hard to make it proportion realistically. That's almost why you see in a lot of cartoons, they only have like four fingers or like three fingers or something like that. They don't even bother drawing the fifth finger because it's just like, we can't make it look realistically proportional to the rest of the model, the rest of the character. I also wonder how much of that goes into like Uncanny Valley territory, where it's like, if we made the hand realistic in terms of proportion, maybe it just looks like uncomfortably large, so it makes everyone dislike how the model looks. Sure. Or something like that. I don't know. That's all just like speculation, but I wouldn't be surprised if something along those lines was kind of true in with an Uncanny Valley sense. But I don't really have much else to say about the game. Is there anything that we didn't talk about that you really wanted to dive into?
Honestly, no. Just the biggest thing to me is just it feels like a movie, and it shows with its characters. I think it was the best selling game of its year. I think I remember reading that preparation for this episode. But if even that's not the case, I know GTA as a whole is like the second greatest selling franchise, I think, or something like that. Just because of the most recent GTA, but they do story really well. If you know, you're not turned on by the sandbox thing or the little goofy side missions. They're all, I think, especially Vice City, it's worth a shot. I mean, just to even go through it, just front to back, don't do the collectibles, other silly shit, but I love it. I mean, to this day, I still love it. I was very excited to do this episode. It was a no-brainer for me when you're looking for people to come on and do this stuff. I was like, I already knew what game I want. There's plenty of games to choose from, but without even like looking it up, I was like, oh, Vice City, 100%.
It's funny because not a lot of people actually, there's been a couple games I've been surprised that people haven't written down more. Vice City being one of them. Metal Gear Solid as well. I mentioned it in the last episode that was released at the time we're recording this. By the time this is released, it's going to be, oh, I don't know, September. So like, it's like it's a little bit ahead, but yeah, it's just, I mentioned it, Metal Gear Solid 2. I was surprised how few, like, only person that asked for it was my friend, was Erica, and that was it.
Maybe
was
just
like, how is that possible?
Maybe like the fear of like everyone thinks they're gonna pick that one, so maybe people try to pick like their second or third pick and like,
well,
go that route.
I was just going to say, that's why I told everyone to give me their top five, so that way we wouldn't run into that situation. So if maybe their number one pick was Metal Gear Solid, well, they don't have to worry about it because they have two or three. They have like four others to choose from.
Did I give you five? I don't even think I gave you five. I think I told you
I don't
know. Vice City.
I don't know. I think I forget. I have it all down here. I actually have to figure out one more episode. I have to book, like, I have the entire list all sorted out except for one, and I have to figure that one out real bad because it's coming up soon. It's due out in August, so I kind of got to figure that out like sooner rather than later. But anyway, so James, thank you for joining me for this episode of the Summer of PS2 on Grand Theft Auto Vice City.
I found my, can I tell you my five picks that I picked?
Yes.
I found it. I pulled it up real quick. I think I sent you on Facebook. So I did, I said Red Faction 2, Simpsons Road Rage, which I mentioned earlier in this episode, any Tony Hawk, and then I put next to Vice City, number one pick, will sing every song though. I have not sung a single song, so I'm a liar.
Well, no, you sang, didn't you hum something? I forget now.
I think I was doing the Flock of Seagulls song before we recorded. Yeah.
That's what it was. That's close enough.
And then Star Wars Battlefront 2 was my other one, so. But Vice City, I was like, I knew it had to be this one.
And I'm glad that you picked it, because like one of the reasons I've been enjoying this series is just I'm getting to try out games that either wouldn't interest me, or if they did interest me, I never really got to play. This would be falling into like, this interests me, but I never really got to play, but at the same time, I'm not looking to play it. It's kind of like just a passing curiosity. So I'm glad I was able to sit down and really try this game out. Give it the good old college try. And it was fine. I don't think Rockstar games are my cup of tea. Though I will say I did play Red Dead Redemption 2 earlier this year, and I loved that game to pieces. I loved it so much more than Red Dead 1. It was so good, even if the controls were dated as hell, but the game was super fun. But like you were saying, though, you can kind of see it in that game specifically. Their storytelling has gotten so good in the series, or Rockstar storytelling in general is just very well done.
Yeah, and to me, that's I like to play like mindless games where story's not even a thing, and I just, you know, like games like Civilization and, you know, Minecraft. I love playing those games as well, but I do enjoy like games where it's just that movie experience. Like I've never played an Uncharted game, but I get the appeal. Like, and I can't wait for that movie to come out.
Dude, you'd like it.
I like that. I like that cinematic feel to games. But, like, I don't know. It's just one of the things. I think Vice City, it's already been done in, like, 5 other movies. But to me, being those movies growing up until this day are still some of my favorite movies. So Vice City, I think, holds, like, a little bit higher, like, nostalgia power in my heart than other games will. Just because it just connects a lot of dots for me. I was like, oh, man, I love these movies and I love being that guy. I mean, you know, he's a shithead, but
well, those movies, but like this game also would introduce his kids, I mean, also, you know, to hookers and blow, but also to
start him young.
But no, it introduces them to that genre, like all 80s music. I remember when I was doing some research for this, I don't even think I was doing research. I just like Hall & Oates. I was looking up Hall & Oates music on YouTube, and there's a lot of comments saying like, oh man, who else got hooked, introduced to this from Grand Theft Auto Vice City? I was like, holy shit. Like this is like that. It's done something. It's like, it's helped kids discover new music. I mean, granted it was kids at the time, sure, but still, it was kids discovered this genre of music that was so far, not genre, but this decade of music that was foreign to them at the time. And I would also argue that once they kind of looked into it and they kind of remembered Grand Theft Auto, maybe looked into it and be like, oh, it's based off a lot of these movies, maybe I should check these movies out, type of thing. Because the music is easier to like find, sure, but the movie references aren't so heavy-handed that you're going to, if you don't know what the movie is based off, like at the end with the Scarface ending, if you don't know what Scarface is, you're just going to think it's that ending. It has no right, meaning to you other than that.
Yeah, you could literally tell someone, like, you could play this game first and then they can watch Scarface, and if you just tell them this is Vice City the movie, they'd believe it. I think,
yeah,
I mean, like, once you, if you know one before the other one, you'll think the other one might be a ripoff. I mean, some people are intuitive, know like this movie looks old as shit, but I mean, I'm just saying, like, like the plot lines alone can do that.
But you were saying also, like, Grand Theft Auto is one of the highest selling series. You're at number one on the PS2 is San Andreas. Number four is Vice City. Number six is Grand Theft Auto 3.
Yeah, that makes sense. I owned all three of them, and they were just, and everyone, they were so in your face. I mean, PS2, I think, was just like, it just in your face. Like, what are the other, what games are 2 and 3? I'm just curious what was between the two GTAs.
Gran Turismo 3 A Spec is number 2, and Gran Turismo 4 is number 3.
Okay. So cars dominate the first 4 spots.
Number 5 is Final Fantasy 10.
Okay.
And then number 7, right below Grand Theft Auto 3, is Metal Gear Solid 2 Sons of Liberty.
Yeah.
And then underneath that is Final Fantasy 12. And it's tied. 8 is a tie between Final Fantasy 12 and Tekken 5, both selling 6 million copies. And then number 10 is Kingdom Hearts.
That's impressive. I mean, just for an American game, or as I say, like a Western game, to do that well on a console that's very heavily dominated in the East, to sell that many units.
But the PlayStation, it was really what invigorated or reinvigorated the third party market in the U.S. Because it started with the Genesis a little bit, but Nintendo still had some pretty strict anti-compete practices and bullshit like that. But the PlayStation 1 is where Western developers could really sink their teeth in. And they also didn't have nearly as many constrictions. Because even if you didn't have any like anti-compete clauses or anti-compete bullshit from Nintendo, where they would like threaten to stop you from being able to publish on their consoles, they would do stuff like that. But even if that wasn't there, you had to buy your cartridges from Nintendo.
Mm.
And then you would have to still do all, you would still have to get all the manufacturing done to, you know, flash all the information to the cartridges. And apparently the amounts that you could buy from Nintendo weren't necessarily realistic. It was either an obscenely large amount or not enough. So there wasn't anything for a nice middle ground. So you would have to make sure that your game was either a hit or do a limited run type of thing of it. And it just, it was not conducive for third party developers, because if you say you started out and you made that really, you made a small game and you had success with its small run, say you wanted to order more, well, then you have to choose, well, is this game going to sell a whole shitload more after that first run? Or is, do I want to do another one and just kind of bog down the market and sell less?
Sounds like Nintendo was the Tommy Vercetti of video games, kind of just cutting everybody out, man. And supply and demand. Looking at you, Nintendo, well, you villain.
So then when Sony came in with the PlayStation and you had the CD as their primary form of, you know, distribution for games, it was so much, it was cheaper to manufacture. Discs are so much more cheap than cartridges, and they could hold more data. So it was a win-win. So that's why, you know, Squaresoft then became Square Enix, but Squaresoft jumped ship over to Sony with Final Fantasy VII, because they're like, we don't have to fucking be like castrated by this tiny, I forget how many
megs. We could
spell
out the word fire.
It was less than 100 megs on an N64 cartridge, usually, if I remember correctly. And, you know, CDs could hold 700 megs. So you would literally get over seven times the amount of data space. And it was just, it wasn't even a competition. So the PlayStation, pretty much to compete with Nintendo, since Nintendo had fortified its, you know, its foot in the market so much, they're like, they just made it super easy to develop for, super easy to publish and distribute for. And that really helped them out. And that's also why you would even see, that's why PlayStation did the thing where if they had a super good seller, then they had, you know, the best of series, yep. I forget what it was called exactly, but you know,
yeah, like the red band across the top.
Yes, exactly. On PS1, it was a green band. Greatest hits, that's what it is. And so then they would re-release the same game, but at a markdown price. So if it was $60 for, you know, Crash Bandicoot 1 when it came out, you know, maybe 2 years later, they would re-release it for like $30. So the game would sell more copies after its initial run, and they would be able to kind of pump life back into it and get a little bit extra money out of it. So it was, they would do shit like that. And on top of that, since it was so cheap, it would allow games that wouldn't normally have a big audience, like Pa Rappa the Rapper or like Jam or Lammy, those music games, you couldn't bank on those on something else. And they were only $40 on release, I believe. I think it was cheaper for those games. So they allowed more experimental titles because they were so fluid with it. And because of that, I would argue U.S. and Western developers really were able to get a foothold into the Japanese market space more so than before. Because Grand Theft Auto got its start on the PS1, and, you know, Medal of Honor started on the PS1. True. And stuff like that. Like, there's a ton of Western games that got a start on the PlayStation 1. And I feel like PS2 is where Western developers finally figured out, like, game design, in a sense. I shouldn't say finally figured out, but like game design for consoles from Western developers hit their stride, because it was at that time, it would, you know, in the PS2, it was more than just Naughty Dog and Insomniac making killer software. It was a bunch of things.
Yeah, they definitely had whatever that company was that made like Twisted Metal. I know that company was huge for a while.
Yes,
yeah, like Neversoft did all the Tony Hawk games and Activision. You know, there's that. Yeah, you're right. And they were all like California based companies too. So. Yeah, I guess that's a good way to look at it.
That was a really long tangent. I don't even know if any of that is correct.
Bullshit. Make up shit.
Okay.
Yeah, Bush did 9/11. They made it to that point, they deserve to hear that.
I will say one
thing about this PS2 thing you're doing. PS2 was the first time that I felt comfortable taking apart my system to fix it when its little laser spindle stopped working. That was like my first introduction that these consoles weren't forever, and they weren't made as great as Nintendo consoles. Because, I mean, my N64 fell down the steps. I can't tell you how many times, like, taking it to friends' houses and stuff. But I remember one day, like, my PS2 just quit. It just would not boot games. And I remember just, you know, there was no sending it out. The warranty was expired at the time. And just finding, like, a PlayStation magazine, or maybe it just been the internet at the time. But, you know, having to take it apart and taking out, like, the laser and resetting the spindle and having, like, to tinker with it just to get it to work again for maybe another week or so, and until I had to reset it and do it again. You know, it definitely got me prepared for the Red Ring of Death when 360 hit and subsequent systems failed me. But PS2 was very very durable for what it tried to do. But
it's a console that really kind of set a lot of standards. I love the PlayStation 2, man. I mean, I could talk about it for ages, but where can the people find you on the internet? Where can they find you on social media and whatnot?
You can find my OnlyFans and Pornhub page. No, you can find
that's where I punch hookers.
I am the hooker. They just punch me. You just got to pay money to do it.
That's your OnlyFans. People pay to punch you.
That sounds horrible. My mom would be so upset. You can find me, and I have a co-host named Brian. We do a podcast called No Geeks Allowed. You can find it wherever you get podcasts. We're everywhere.
That is spelled K-N-O-W, oh, yeah. No Geeks Allowed.
I'm glad you do that, because I never do that.
I feel like because your podcast name is such a good pun, I guess. I guess it's called a pun, but I really like the name of your podcast, but because of that, you have to spell it. Otherwise, people are going to spell like N-O or something.
But people
like
are going to know I don't know how to spell.
Well, you don't tell them.
No, I just got to get a script. Oh, I can't read it. Damn, I'm screwed no matter what. But yeah, you can find us at K-N-O-W, No Geeks Allowed, wherever you get podcasts, Twitter, Instagram, your local library. I'm going to be buying some DVDs or stealing them or something.
All right, fair enough. As usual, you can follow me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at StillOatingPod on all of them. If you want to reach out, you can email me, StillOatingContact@gmail.com, or you can also check out my website, StillOatingPodcast.com. If you want to support the show, there's a couple ways you can do that. The easiest way, and it would only cost a moment of your time, is just to give it a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or whichever podcasting app you use. That helps get the show out there and helps more people find it. If you want to support the show monetarily, you can check out Patreon. It's patreon.com/stillowningpod. Even just $1 a month will help grow the show. And finally, the most important... Oh my God, I fucking do this all the time. Check out the network both James and I are a part of, the Podbeard Network. Both No Geeks Allowed and myself are part of the network, so go check out podbeardnetwork.com to check out all the different shows. And now, the most important shout out. The nonprofit organization I'm partnered with, the Bit by Bit Foundation. The Bit by Bit Foundation is a nonprofit, like I said. It is dedicated to putting video games and video game consoles into the hands of children receiving inpatient care at hospitals, so you can check them out at bitbybitfoundation.org, and that should do it for me. So, James, thank you for joining me. This was a super fun episode.
Thank you, man. I love anytime you want to talk about some silly shit like this. Anytime you want to talk PS2.
Sounds good.
Thank you.
And you guys have been doing that those video game movies, and I'm hoping that, like, once you guys start back up again, because you've been on hiatus for a minute, once you guys start back up again, I call Double Dragon.
Oh, definitely, dude. Double Dragon's on there. I mean, just whatever anybody wants to talk about, they're all awful, so it's it's just how much you want to subject yourself to, so I can't wait to have you back on.
All right, and that should do it for this episode, and I will see you all next time. We'll be right back.